This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Russian airstrikes at Syria, but the U.S. questions their targets. More cyber spying trouble between the U.S. and China. New plans to curb youth violence in America.
It's not just about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps or just changing your mind and say, I want to do right. It's having the right people and support around you that helps you pick the right path and have the courage and strength to stay on that path.
Another Hollywood actress thinks she can sing. We'll see all about that. These stories and more just ahead. I'm Ray Kugel. Russia is carrying out airstrikes in Syria. The bombing started Wednesday after Russian lawmakers approved a request by the Kremlin. Charles Maines reports from Moscow.
Russia's upper house of parliament unanimously authorized a measure to allow troops to be sent to Syria after receiving a formal request from President Vladimir Putin. Within hours, Russian Defense Ministry officials announced the first airstrikes, saying Russian jets had targeted weapons storehouses and vehicles believed to belong to Islamic State fighters. Speaking at the Kremlin, President Putin said the Russian military maneuvers were fully in line with international law. It came at the formal request of Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad. He noted Russia would limit itself to an air campaign rather than putting troops on the ground. Putin pointed to the numbers of Russians and other foreign fighters joining the Islamic State as justification for support for forces under Syrian leader Bashar al-Assad.
Не надо быть специалистом по этим вопросам, чтобы понять, если они достигнут успеха в Сирии.
He said you do not have to be a specialist in these matters to know what happens. If Islamic State achieves success in Syria, these fighters will then come home to their own countries, and they will come to Russia. He added, it's no secret. The so-called Islamic State has long called Russia its enemy. Charles Maines for VOA News, Moscow.
U.S. Defense Secretary Ashton Carter says Russian airstrikes hit areas that probably did not contain Islamic State targets. He says the Kremlin's decision to conduct air operations at the request of President Bashar al-Assad is, in his words, tantamount to pouring gasoline on the fire.
Russia states an intent to fight ISIL, on the one hand, and to support Bashar al-Assad and his regime on the other. Fighting ISIL without pursuing a parallel political transition only risks escalating the civil war in Syria, and with it, the very extremism and instability that Moscow claims to be concerned about and aspire to fighting.
Secretary Carter said the United States believes a lasting defeat of IS militants can only be achieved in parallel with a political transition leading to President Assad's departure. With ongoing U.S.-led coalition airstrikes in Syria, Secretary of State John Kerry said that the U.S. and Russian militaries will hold talks as soon as possible to avoid any encounters. The United States says it will continue its air operations in Syria, ignoring Russia's request for U.S. aircraft to avoid Syrian airspace. The Pentagon and Western officials question whether the Russian airstrikes spotted near the western Syrian city of Homs are aimed at the Islamic State. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb spoke with International Edition host Susan Yaki about the speed with which the Russians have deployed.
This is a surprise. According to a U.S. official, a Russian general approached a U.S. official at the U.S. Embassy in Baghdad, and that general said that Russia would begin anti-Islamic State airstrikes in Syria today. He asked the U.S. official to have U.S. members remain clear of Syrian airspace, to remove any ground troops. Of course, the United States does not have any ground troops in Syria, and the U.S. official took that and reported it back, and then we've since heard from a spokesperson from the State Department that the U.S. says that they are going to continue to fly their missions over Iraq and Syria, and as we've seen with the U.S. Conducting an airstrike in Aleppo, that is what they've continued to do.
Well, Carla, do you have any confirmation from the U.S. government that the Russians are actually bombing ISIL positions and not anti-Assad positions?
No, quite the contrary. I just heard from a U.S. official that said that they're striking in Homs. The targets are unknown, but it is fair to say, according to the official, that the target is not the Islamic State. The Islamic State is focused in the areas of Raqqa, Deir ez-Zor, Aleppo. Homs is not a place where the Islamic State is. However, Homs is a place where a lot of anti-Assad supporters and anti-Assad fighters are. So the United States and this official did tell me that they do not have any confirmation of what the target is, but they are very sure by deduction, that was another direct quote from him, that the strikes are not anti-Islamic State.
Well, what official statements have you gotten in the past about Russian military involvement in Syria?
Well, this has all come about very quickly. The presidents of Russia and the United States just met on Monday. Secretary Carter then went to his staff and said that Russia conversations would begin to avoid any sort of deconfliction. Deconfliction is just you don't want people to be in the same airspace. You don't want an accident to happen because any miscalculation between two nuclear superpowers could be catastrophic. So that was supposed to begin, and then we heard this. So I think the United States is kind of taken by surprise on how quickly Russia has been moving.
VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb speaking with International Edition's Susan Yockey. The Twitter universe is reacting to events in Syria. Social media correspondent G. Abby Lee is here with the latest. Hi, G.
Hello, Ray.
It seems like there are differing views in the situation between Washington and the Kremlin. Is that being reflected as well on Twitter?
Oh, definitely. Like Carla said earlier, it's clear the U.S. government is taken aback by Russia's military action in Syria, or their target in Syria, to be more specific. So, Ray, in some ways, what Russia appears to be doing right now is exactly the opposite of what Washington wanted. So without further ado, let's take a look at both American and Russian Twitter accounts for comparison. Which one should we start with?
Well, let's start with Russia, since its military is the one conducting the airstrikes.
Sure. RT is Russia's state-run television station, and on Twitter, at RT_COM. It tweeted this earlier Wednesday. Hashtag Syria. Russia strikes 8 ISIS targets after reconnaissance mission makes 20 flights. About 190 people share the tweet so far.
Okay, so the Russian state media outlet is adamant so far that they're targeting the terrorist group. But what is Washington's position?
Well, Secretary of State John Kerry didn't shy away from tweeting about how he feels about it, but he didn't specify whether Russia's military actions are indeed targeted toward forces opposing the Assad government. That's, of course, referring to the Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. He's usually not that prolific on Twitter, but he sent out 4 tweets regarding this Wednesday.
Well, that's interesting. Can you tell us at least one?
Sure. His first tweet reads like this. The U.S. supports any genuine effort to fight ISIL. However, we'll not be confused in our fight against ISIL with support for Assad. Now, in later tweets, he wrote, Washington would have grave concerns should Russia strike areas where ISIL-affiliated targets are not operating. Secretary Kerry is on Twitter, at John Kerry. Ray?
IS, ISIL, ISIS, they all refer to the Islamic State. But there is only one handle for G on Twitter, and that's at G Abby Lee, GeeAbbyLee. And our VOA International Edition account is also on Twitter at VOA_IE. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Jazz America.
This is Russ Davis, and on my program Jazz America, I carry on the tradition begun decades ago by the great Willis Conover by exploring the wonders of a century of jazz history. I'll cover it all from Dixieland to swing to bebop to modal, free jazz, fusion, world jazz, contemporary, and beyond. Plus, you'll hear the words of the artists themselves as they tell their incredible stories. Join me for Jazz America, Saturdays and Sundays at 13 hours Universal Time, online at voanews.com and the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. According to the Washington Post, an undisclosed number of officers of the Central Intelligence Agency have been pulled from China in the wake of a massive cyber theft earlier this year that exposed the personal data of more than 21 million U.S. government workers. The CIA declined to comment. The newspaper quoted a director of National Intelligence, James Clapper, as saying the OPM breach posed significant risks to U.S. intelligence gathering. U.S. officials have linked the OPM breach to China, but have not said publicly whether they believe its government was responsible. The Chinese government denies responsibility. Clapper says he remains skeptical a new U.S.-China cybersecurity agreement will slow the increasing and more sophisticated cyber attacks on U.S. public and private computer networks. He stopped short of accusing Beijing of being behind all such attacks during an appearance before the Senate Armed Services Committee Tuesday. He suggested economic sanctions may be the best way to force China to curb cyber attacks. University of Chicago China expert Dolly Young told International Edition's Victor Beatty the issue is complicated and the Chinese government will have a challenge to rein in rogue hackers in the country.
Well, my sense with those kind of issues, and given the bitter acrimony before the negotiations, before the agreement or understanding rather than a formal agreement in many ways, is that actually it's going to take a lot of effort on both sides in many ways of monitoring, of reaching out to the people who might actually be committing such acts. And in the Chinese case also, I think everyone recognizes that there are many players in China. This is a vast country, many people, some are affiliated with state units. There are a lot of young people as well who are very interested in doing things as well. So my sense is it requires a lot of monitoring and also education on the part of the Chinese. So I would be looking for some indicators of what the Chinese government is doing. Are they going to be issuing some sort of guidelines or documents to people working in the software industry, for example, or who are writing codes to tell them that, yeah, there are certain actions that are simply not acceptable and so on. And of course, there would need to be continuing dialogue and review of the situation over time. So in that sense, actually, a little bit of skepticism actually is warranted, whether it's technology or trade or many other issues.
I guess from your comment, that would imply that the Chinese government, in your view, is not responsible for all of these attacks.
Yeah, I think, just like in our country, in the United States, we also from time to time have wayward actions by individuals as well. So in that sense, actually, a government cannot be fully responsible for everything. But that doesn't mean that the Chinese government doesn't have any accountability, because, of course, governments can do a lot more, including, for example, finding out who are the perpetrators and, of course, punishing those who do.
Mr. Clapper, in his testimony before the Senate on Tuesday, as well as other top U.S. military officials, said cyber threats are increasing in frequency, scale, sophistication, and severity, and the U.S. needed the same kind of deterrent capability in cyberspace that it maintains for nuclear weapons. Obviously, this is a serious problem that incorporates not just attacks from China, but other countries.
Yeah, I think this is a global issue. We have an industry, and in fact, it's not a single sector. It's a sector, a technology that has become so indispensable to our everyday lives and, of course, to the functions, the businesses of gigantic corporations and governments. So software and, of course, operating systems are everywhere. So in that sense, it's extremely important that there are systems globally to deal with those kind of issues, to provide some order, while, however, continuing to encourage innovation of experimentation around the world.
University of Chicago China expert Dolly Young speaking with International Edition's Victor Beatty. Well, there won't be a U.S. government shutdown after all. President Obama signed a short-term spending bill Wednesday, keeping the government open. It gives Congress and the president about 10 more weeks to fashion a longer-lasting budget deal. Meanwhile, the head of the International Monetary Fund is warning that global growth will slow next year. Alexis Christophorus joins us from VOA's New York Bureau with more.
During a speech in Washington, D.C., the IMF's managing director, Christine Lagarde, said a possible rise in U.S. interest rates, coupled with a slowdown in China, are contributing to uncertainty and higher market volatility in the global economy. Back in July, the IMF projected world growth at 3.3%. That would be down slightly from 2014. Now the IMF expects only modest acceleration next year, but did not provide a specific forecast. A formal economic outlook is expected October 6th. Lagarde has previously urged the Federal Reserve to delay an interest rate hike until 2016. While emerging markets are generally better prepared for higher U.S. interest rates than in the past, Lagarde said rising borrowing costs and a stronger dollar could reveal what she calls currency mismatches, leading to corporate defaults.
The head of the IMF also made some predictions about the economic outlook for emerging markets.
The growth potential of the world economy is being held back by low productivity, aging populations, and high debt. Now, Lagarde said emerging economies need to improve their monitoring of the foreign exchange exposure of major companies, while countries with room to raise public spending should try to boost growth by increasing investment. She predicts that Japan will return to growth and that the euro area recovery will gain momentum. However, she warned that expansion in emerging economies will likely decline for the fifth straight year. She said while India remains a bright spot, countries such as Russia and Brazil are facing what she calls serious economic difficulties. And she added that reforms in China to lift incomes will lead to slower, safer, and more sustainable growth.
That's Alexis Christophorus giving us the business from New York. Coming up, a brand new use for vitamin D. This is VOA.
From science and technology, here's what's new.
What's new? Rubber that repairs itself. For the first time, scientists at the Leibniz Institute for Polymer Research in Dresden, Germany, have made tire-grade rubber without the processing step called vulcanization that's been essential to inflatable tires since their invention. Vulcanization means once something sharp cuts tire rubber, the tire usually can't be repaired for long-term use. This new process avoids vulcanization and modifies the rubber into a durable, elastic material that can actually fix itself over time. The researchers say a cut in this new material healed quickly at room temperature, and after 8 days, the rubber could withstand a tire pressure considerably higher than current standards. Add a little heat, and the self-repair process happens even quicker. For VOA's What's New, I'm Todd Grossoff.
This is VOA's International Edition coming to you from Washington. Murder rates have gone up during the first half of the year in several American cities. Many of the homicide victims have been juveniles. Now city officials and police in some communities are fighting back. VOA's Chris Simpkins reports from New Jersey's largest city on programs designed to steer young people away from a life of crime.
Newark, New Jersey has seen a spike in homicides, robberies, drug dealing, and gang activity. People in the community are upset, especially about the rising murder rate among young African Americans. Community activist Reggie Miller runs programs that offer positive social and emotional development skills for young black children. His goal is to convince them to stay out of trouble and finish college.
I'm trying to get them to just look at life critically and know that they need to, through education, through service and giving back, that your life can take a greater turn than where you are right now.
Dennis Rodriguez knows young people who have committed crimes but who want to change their lives.
A lot of them understand that they have talents and capabilities, but a lot of them think that those talents and capabilities is not what it's supposed to be. A lot of them think they should use that talents and capabilities for something destructive instead of something constructive.
Newark's mayor, Roz Baraka, is trying various ways to curb youth crime. He's put more police officers on patrol, but with mixed results. As a former high school principal, he's also put more resources towards educational programs that target young people in some of the city's most crime-ridden neighborhoods.
So it's not just about pulling yourself up by your bootstraps or just changing your mind and say, I want to do right. It's having the right people and support around you that helps you pick the right path and have the courage and strength to stay on that path.
The mayor's example has 19-year-old Darnell Smith turning his life around.
I want to be known for that guy right there, but he also took another step and became the next councilman, or like Roz Baraka, councilman, then mayor. That could be me in the next 10, 15 years from now. Like, you never know.
Darrell Price is trying to help 16 to 24-year-old high school dropouts. He runs a program that gives them educational and job skills.
Recidivism rate for young people who we have who have already committed crimes, our recidivism rate is below 5%.
17-year-old Jasmine Barnett had no plans to finish school until she had a baby. Now that she's a parent, she's about to graduate and look for a job.
It always takes that one person who could change you. For me, it was my son.
Community leaders want the city to fund more programs that will reduce youth violence and crime while putting young people here on a path to succeed in life. Chris Simpkins, VOA News, Newark, New Jersey.
Over the next 50 years, dementia and its most common form, Alzheimer's disease, are expected to rise dramatically among older adults throughout the world. A new report finds that adults with healthy levels of vitamin D could be of tremendous benefit to fight it. Here's VOA's Carol Pearson.
Our skin absorbs vitamin D from sunshine. Vitamin D is also found in salmon and other fatty fish, as well as in nuts, lentils, and other foods. Low levels of vitamin D may play a role in memory loss and dementia. Caring for someone with dementia can be exhausting. Having it can be terrifying. Chris Roberts is one of the estimated 47 million people around the world who suffer from dementia.
The worst thing that I found, I was getting lost in the car. I completely not just forget where I was going, I wouldn't know where I was.
The World Health Organization says about 60% of those who have dementia live in low and middle-income countries where resources to care for them are limited. U.S. researchers studied vitamin D levels in older adults and compared their cognitive ability, the ability to remember things and to process thoughts. Dr. Joshua Miller from Rutgers University is one of the researchers.
Some of the subjects had outright dementia, some had mild cognitive impairment, and some had what we would call normal cognitive functioning.
The researchers found that about 60% of the group was low in vitamin D.
Those who had dementia also had lower vitamin D status than those who had mild cognitive impairment or who had normal cognitive functioning.
Those low in vitamin D showed more short-term memory loss, as well as less ability to organize thoughts and activities, prioritize tasks, and make decisions.
They were declining about 2.5 times faster than those who had adequate vitamin D.
While this study shows that low levels of vitamin D is associated with dementia, more studies are needed to see if taking vitamin D supplements can help slow this decline. The study was published in JAMA Neurology from the Journal of the American Medical Association. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
A popular young actress is making a career move, sort of. Haley Steinfeld is going to give the music industry a chance to see what she can do. International Edition's Jim Stevenson talked with VOA music expert Ray McDonald about this.
Wow, how unique is that, huh? But Haley Steinfeld has already shown us that she knows how to sing. She's an 18-year-old actress-singer. She's from Los Angeles. And even if her singing and acting career goes kaput, which it probably won't, she still has a bright future in personal training because her father is a personal trainer, as is her uncle, Jake Steinfeld. And if you're a student of popular culture here in the U.S., you may remember about 20 years ago, Jake Steinfeld founded a personal fitness empire under the Body by Jake brand. Mm. And so Haley is her, his niece.
Yeah. When I get chills at night, I feel it deep inside without you. Yeah. Know how to satisfy, keeping the tempo right without you. Yeah. Pictures.
She began acting at a very young age. She was 8 years old. At 13, she played Maddie Ross in the remake of the Western True Grit. That earned her a nomination for Best Supporting Actress at the age of 13. Not bad. In 2013, she was in the sci-fi adventure Ender's Game. And earlier this year, Haley starred in Pitch Perfect 2. The Pitch Perfect franchise is turning into a big hit. Movie made a lot of money. She sang a Jessie J song, Flashlight. Mm-hmm. And Pitch Perfect 3 will be coming out in 2017, and Haley is also in that.
Yeah. Got me speaking in tongues, the beautiful it comes without you. Yeah.
Now, after Pitch Perfect 2 was a big hit, Republic Records came calling with a record contract. Haley is making her debut album, which she says she can't wait for us to hear because it's going to surprise a lot of people. And we already know about the first hit single. It's called Love Myself. It was released on August 7th, and it's currently rising in 30th place on the latest Billboard Hot 100 singles chart.
And that sounds so good, Ray. Haley, obviously, is going to have a bright future in front of her at the tender age of 18.
Well, she certainly knows what to do. I mean, she's been around showbiz figures all her life. I think she's pretty well prepared for what comes next.
Be sure to follow Ray on Twitter, Ray on the Hits, and also his countdowns right here on The Voice of America. Ray, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, we do know Haley's a good actress. Maybe that's where it's always going to be. That's it for this edition of International Edition. You can get more news, features, and videos on our website at voanews.com. Thank you for joining us. I'm Ray Kugel in Washington. Enjoy the day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a blatant violation of international humanitarian law, self-declared authorities in the separatist-controlled Luhansk region of eastern Ukraine have ordered 10 of 11 international humanitarian aid organizations to cease operations and leave the area within 2 days after the notification. Included among these are a number of United Nations aid agencies, as well as non-governmental humanitarian organizations such as France's Doctors Without Borders, Czech Republic's People in Need, and the International Rescue Committee. Only the International Red Cross will be allowed to resume work, but only after signing an agreement dictated by the separatists. In the wake of Russia's move to illegally annex Ukraine's Crimean Peninsula, Russian-backed separatists staged an uprising in eastern Ukraine, and for the past 17 months have been fighting Ukrainian government forces attempting to dislodge them from the Donbas. As a result, some 8,000 people have since been killed, and well over 2 million have been displaced, about 1.4 million of them internally. According to the United Nations, as many as 5 million Ukrainians are in need of assistance today, particularly now as winter approaches. But as a result of last month's ban, some 3 million of them will not receive the supplies and services they need. A delivery of 16,000 tons of humanitarian assistance is being blocked from those in need. This means that 150,000 people will have to do without their monthly food allotments, while some 30,000 will wait in vain for shelter materials and household items they urgently need. 1.3 million are at risk of losing access to potable water. There will be no essential medicines such as insulin and tuberculosis vaccines, no anesthesia to perform life-saving surgery. The United States calls on the Russia-backed separatists to take immediate steps to improve the lives of the very people they claim to care about most by allowing humanitarian organizations unrestricted access and facilitating the provision of desperately needed assistance now to all those who are suffering, said State Department spokesperson John Kirby in a written statement. Russia and the separatists it backs must fulfill their obligations under the Minsk agreements and allow unimpeded access to all areas of Ukraine by international humanitarian organizations.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.